Welcome to the 40K Lorecast.
Welcome to the 40K Lorecast with me, John Barsotti, and Brad Chester.
This guy.
In today's cast, we're going to do a dangerous experiment.
It's out of time.
Yes, we're going to let Brad speak into the microphone about not only his favorite faction, 40K, his favorite thing in all of sci-fi.
Yeah, it's Eldar.
The Eldar. So this is going to go long, very long.
Space elves.
Yep, we're going to do 3 episodes. I've told Brad we're only doing 3 episodes right now. We'll do more later. So whatever we don't get to in what's probably going to be close to 6 hours of content, we'll have to push down the road. Anyway.
I have had a couple people that have said they appreciate really how we stay on focus. And I want to point out again that that has nothing to do with me.
No, that is totally me. We have deep notes. I have to keep Brad. It's like I don't know if bumper bowling exists outside of the U.S., but that's effectively how we have to do this cast where like you have to, the ball just careening off the sides, but at least we're kind of going down a lane. By the way, today what we're going to do is really kind of set up Eldar a bit better. So we're going to cover a couple of key pieces. One is the Eldar Pantheon, which is, I think, one of the more confusing elements of the 40K universe.
It's super confusing because it's been semi-retcon and very confusing because they made a lot of just alludes to it.
Right.
As opposed to what actually is happening. And then a lot of the short stories that went out were completely different. So we're going to talk about kind of all of those and then how it's seen right now, but it's also a big deal because some of it's still Isha. Things are still happening right now.
Yeah, they're still being used. Yeah, this is now, when we say retcon, some stuff like Zotes were correctly written out of the game. The Eldar Pantheon is more, in my opinion, I think it's one of the most confusing pieces for new players. And we're going to get to it in a second, guys, but we'll dive into that. After that, we're going to talk about the creation of the craft worlds, where they actually come from. And then finally, what the Eldar Webway. And we just think once we've done that, it makes the next few casts a little bit easier because those are the big things we have to refer to.
We're going to reference this a lot.
Exactly.
To be honest with you, if you're going back from a future cast and you're coming back, told you so in this cast.
Yeah, exactly. All right, before we begin, please follow and comment on the podcast. It really does help our metrics. We're doing very, very well within Spotify, even within iTunes, kind of everywhere. So thank you for all of you who left comments. We can read them, by the way. So some of the ones you guys have left have been quite funny. I do appreciate that. Another one is join our Discord. The link is in the notes. As we're getting deeper and deeper into this lore, I mean, we're at episode 43 right now. We don't really plan on stopping anytime soon. It's a great place to go in and ask questions.
I hope not on that because we do have.
The only reason we would stop is Brad, one of us dies. And so we're both rooting for it not to happen.
It's me, but.
Yeah. I travel for work. like mine would be a car accident. Your would be a like, yeah.
Yeah.
The doctors agree. But anyway, but that's where we're going to be going. The Discord's a great place, especially if you're just discovering us for the first time and maybe you're listening to an episode that's a few months old. Ask. We're all in there and all the people are in there. It's great for them.
People will jump on and give you mm-hmm. tons of different lore aspects. And we've got gameplay on there too.
We also do. Yeah. The goal of the Discord really is to turn it into kind of almost like a controlled version of Reddit around this lore where people can come in, they can have conversations, they can ask questions, get stuff answered and not worry about getting upvoted or downvoted. So anyway, that's my opinion. Although I do use Reddit. Reddit's awesome. I just don't think it's, I don't think it's very,
again, be
inviting
cool.
to new employees.
Be cool with people.
Yeah.
That's the biggest thing. Don't be afraid to ask the craziest newbie thing ever.
Yeah,
seriously though. I really think that.
We wrote that this cast exists, honestly, for newbies primarily. Like it's for veterans and newbies. But like today we're going to get into the Eldar Pantheon. This is something that I remember confused the hell out of me for a long time and took a while to get it. But anyway, next thing I want to bring out is the Patreon. There's another link in the notes. Bunch of you have already given money to the Patreon, and I cannot thank you enough. We are now on new microphones. We've actually got new audio set up. There's some other changes coming down the pipe for the podcast that are effectively being funded by these Patreon members. So thank you so much for that. It really does help.
We're totally going to be adults soon.
Yeah.
Maybe not in 2024.
I mean, we're not going to actually do a truly organized cast, but we'll do this. But and we're not leaving the basement. The last one, though, is, of course, Brad. Brad is available for coaching in 40K for both competitive and casual players. If you're new to the game, want to know how to play. If you're a veteran of the game, you want to play better. Brad's great for that. And you can get him by emailing him at.
oldmanbrad40k@gmail.com.
Or go to our website, the40klorecast.com, and click his link. Anyway, onto the cast. So as we've been alluding to, let's dive right into it. We wanted to focus on the Eldar gods. And this is because every player who's new to the game goes, wait, the Eldar have gods? Yeah. So they're chaos gods. No.
Well,
sort of, but not really. So blah, blah, blah. And we're getting to some of our own personal theories in this in a minute. But yeah. And so I think the note I wrote here is we'll address the flaming elephant in the room. What's an Eldar god? Yep. I thought all the gods were chaos. Is there a specific like chapter in one of the GW books that explains this really well?
Nope.
Nope. Eldar gods are...
They're real, but also, what were they?
Yeah, that's a key point. They're not mythology. They are real. Yeah. The Eldar gods, well, real. It's all fake, but...
Yeah, it's real fake.
It's real fake. It's real fake. It's canon. Doors. It's just not an actual thing. Let's just kind of go into, you know, what they were. Were they actual gods or just really powerful beings? Because Eldar gods are insanely powerful.
One of the big things, I want to go into this kind of right away, because we have to go into what are we talking about? Because whatever you decide, and this is kind of on a you basis, to be honest with you, because they GW does not make a clear and defined. Because again, the Eldar were around for 65 million years that we know of.
Right.
And that was once they got raised up by the old ones. One of the big things is they became certain members of the Eldar race just became wildly powerful because they were effectively immortal.
Yep.
You have a lot of time to be juiced up by the warp, which you use at will. So you have to ask yourself, are the Eldar gods, you know, people that were an Eldar that was juiced up for 4 million years and is now the pinnacle?
Like a Krork for an orc type thing?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, let's just set some stages so we understand under them better. So the Eldar gods were exceptionally powerful. So there is not, this is not mythology we're talking about here.
These are
very much so, real. They did speak with the Eldar. They communicated with them actually pretty routinely. Isha, for example, was really active within them. So we know that the Eldar gods were beings. They did exist, but they also were not fully omnipotent or all powerful.
They were never on that. They were just powerful. And they were very knowledgeable, but knowledgeable on a, I have more access to stuff to you than anything else.
Yeah. And the example I use here is that when Slaanesh was born, it was not hard for Slaanesh to rip to shreds the Eldar gods.
Like with just quickness too.
Like instant killed with one fought for a minute or two.
A couple of them. They got.
Well, no, only one fought. The rest of them she ate.
Well, some of them fought. You just don't know that they fought because they got beat so quickly.
I guess that's true. Yeah. Yeah, you're right. I guess it does still count as a fight.
One had a fight that you watched on pay-per-view and it was a bad fight.
Yeah.
And the other ones you just heard on the internet. Oh, yeah. He also beat that guy?
So, and they also did, another thing about them is they fought amongst themselves quite a bit too. There's a lot of, a lot of parallels here to Greek mythology.
I was just about to say, this is 100%. They did a lot of Greek mythology on the fact that the gods were oftentimes petty. The gods fought amongst themselves. The gods wanted their people to fight again, to fight against their followers kind of thing. And a lot of times it wasn't an open fight, as in we're fighting.
It was
screw their shit over.
Yeah, childish fights. Here's where I'm going to do John theory, what I think these things are. Brad's willing to disagree. I think they were all an early version of a demon prince. They line up really well with that. Like a Bellicor. We don't know when Bellicor was birthed. We just know Bellicor existed at some point. And I think my opinion is the Eldar gods fall into this because they're more powerful than a regular demon prince. Don't get me wrong, but.
That's what I was about to say. I mean, they're wildly. I could say they draw their power from the same place. Because everybody's drawing their power from the warp, the immaterial.
Right, and this is why I compare it to Bellicor. I mean, Bellicor has been powered up, obviously, by the Chaos Gods over the years, but I compare it to Bellicor in that Bellicor would slap a bloodthirster around. True, like, horribly.
But also, the Chaos Gods don't hold their power to any other power.
True, and so what I'm thinking is my thought process is that before the Chaos Gods fully formed the warp energy was kind of available everywhere. It's the same way that my viewpoint is that What are the Dark Angels things?
The Watchers in the Dark.
The Watchers of the Dark are good Nurglings. And spoiler alert, all my opinion is all of the sisters' gods or the sisters' saints, those are also demon princes.
Those are pretty demon princes for sure.
Yeah.
And I get it, but the thing is that everything that gets power from the Upside Down, the Warp, whatever you want to actually refer to it as, it isn't just that's the bad place. Again, the old ones used only the Warp as their power, and they did no bad things. They weren't spawning chaos. They weren't doing anything. Eldar gods got their powers from here also. Doesn't really make them a demon prince. It just means that that's that endless source of power is where they got their power.
Fair point. Yeah, I'm just comparing them to a demon prince. I'm not saying they are demon princes. I'm just saying that that's what their entity would most closely be, is a warp entity.
I'll give you that bit, but anything that if you just went, hey, here's a Farseer, and then you went, hey, instead of thousands of years, how about you give this dude millions of years
to power up?
Is it an Eldar god, or is it just a super juiced up guy?
Yeah, that's a fair point.
Who never stopped grinding in the MMORPGs playing. So they're just like, hey man, I'm XPing up.
Just going to the forest and killing boars. There's
no level cap here.
No one's gonna get that one. That's to kind of set the stage for what we think the Eldar gods are. So let's dive into the actual story of the Eldar gods, which again...
Sorry, guys. I can only imagine right now that there's someone that's doing their thesis on Greek or Roman mythology.
And they're about to get so mad.
Yeah. They're setting fire to things.
Just like, what are you going... Yeah, the level of plagiarism you're going to get here. Now, some of it is not all the way direct plagiarism, but it's definitely skirting the edge of IP violation, you know, like, and by skirting the edge, I don't mean skirting the edge at all. I mean, it's there. So let's start listing off kind of the gods and then we'll dive into them. The first one is Ossarion.
Odin?
Yeah. Odin or no, it's Zeus. It's Zeus. It's not Odin. It's Zeus.
Yeah. 100%.
Yeah. Ossarion is the eldest of the Eldar gods. It's hard to say that eldest. He's also the wisest and the most powerful, sort of. That part's not even there. So depending on the codexes, he's either rules over the gods or oversees them.
I think that my take on him is he was the oldest and wisest and probably most powerful. Like sometimes a lot of these gods spike in weird power.
Yeah.
But as a whole, he's the most powerful.
He has the most powerful because in numerous stories, he will intervene and all the gods just capitulate.
He's also the coach, the ref, the hey guys. He's the one that comes down and says, we shouldn't do this. And I think that it's important that he exists because when you have a bunch of possibly just straight, super powerful, regular people that ascended to this, which again is the theory. Mm-hmm. One of the theories of this, you need someone that was willing to, and he was the first and the oldest of them, to be able to just step in and go, hey, you can't do this. It's going to wreck things for our race kind of thing.
Yeah. And the other thing too, I mean, he's also the one that everyone appeals to. So when the gods are fighting, they go to him. This is why he's kind of dad, also known as Zeus. He is Zeus without a lot of the, we'll call it baggage that comes with
Greek mythology. Sometimes when you decide that you're going to go hang out as an animal and do things.
Yeah. Of course, just like in Greek mythology, Ossarion has a brother. Actually, there's a bunch of siblings. The first one is Cain, who later gets the moniker Kalmensa for the blood-handed.
He becomes the bloody-handed guy.
Bloody-handed guy, yeah. And Cain is the god of war, but also murder, violence, and destruction.
This gets more leaned into later on, though, because Cain was just the god of war, but the god of battle. Like, because the Eldar had a lot of structure to their
battle. He did, but Cain has a temper. That's the thing. He was not like that. When we look at some of like the mythologies, the god of war is a god of like strategy. It's a god of temperament, like Napoleon type style of like, you know, I'm going to set it up. Cain has a temper.
The thing is that because Eldar, and to go into Eldar just a little bit on some of the things, and we talked about this in some of the previous games, Eldar feel things a thousand times more strongly, like actual emotions, than humans do. And I feel that they always had this because when they went to war in the most dire times, you had to unleash your Cain, air quotes, because you had to unleash your wrath because you couldn't, Eldar just can't lean in any one thing because they get too, too into anything they do.
Right. Brad's a big Eldar homer, and I am too, but I'm going to point out, Cain's also the god of torture.
I mean,
most people don't need a god of torture. It's not something you need to worship into.
I feel it's the Dark Eldar gave some of this stuff a bad rap, all right?
Just throwing it out there. Also the god of torture and violence, really all forms of violence. That's Cain. Cain's going to come up a lot as we're discussing the history of the Eldar. Next one is Gaea, who's really kind of a fun one because she's the term they use in the book is consort, which I had to Google, which I had to look up a couple of times. I was pretty sure consort meant wife, and it does. And I couldn't, because she's actually the consort of both Asur-Yan and Cain. So she was married
to both
brothers.
But she was supposed to be the matriarch, basically, of that.
Oh, yeah. And I get that. But there's just a little bit of Oedipus going on in here. It's not like Oedipus. This gets a little weird. Anyway, quickly moving on before we get in trouble. Isha. Isha is another one of the most important gods in the history.
Isha's awesome. And she becomes way more awesome in modern 40K.
Yeah. Isha's, to me, Isha and Cain are actually probably the two most critical in modern 40K. Well, now, Sigurd, yeah, Sigurd is probably the most critical. But anyway, Isha is the goddess of harvest, life, and fertility.
She also guided the Eldar in so many ways and led them down good. She is almost always positive in what she did. It didn't always work out, but the path that Isha left for the Eldar led us to things like the Exodites and things of that nature, because she wanted them to be what happened before the old ones raised them up, which is poets and philosophers and the greatest of the creators of beauty and love, basically, in the galaxy. And that is not always the case.
It didn't always work out. No. And Isha is going to be one of the ones that's going to make some confusion for players, because Isha is also the one who created the Eldar. So we'll get to that in a little bit. This is where the Eldar pantheon is going to get a little bit loopy. We're doing what we can to keep it together. Vol, who is the Forge, this is 100% Hephaestus. whereas Isha was a Demeter hybrid, Vol just is Hephaestus.
Laughably so.
Yeah, he runs the Forge for the gods. He makes swords for gods. I have no idea what his purpose is.
I think that these are all just fables, because he's a god that made swords. Yes, but he's also, I think a lot of these things are,
there's more he does.
They're
that,
wild.
I'm saying
a lot of these stories aren't actually that. Like, he's creating, these guys are technologically superior in every other way.
I think he's what gives that to them. We'll get there in a minute.
It's just, he's, you know, is he creating a sword for you, or was he really creating a warp drive? Right. You know, I mean, or it would be for them a Webley drive.
Another one who doesn't, and so some of these guys I will point out get mentioned by like 6 or 7 lines in a codex. And one of them is Hoek, Hawk, H-O-E-C. Hook, Hook.
But he doesn't do anything.
But sort of yes and no. So he's the god of the Webway.
I know he's mentioned, but like, as the god of the Webway, what does he do? And then you look at his resume and he goes, oh, apparently I've never done anything.
Yeah, he visits. It's a weird thing. So all it says in the codex is that he's visited all the Webways. He's the one that's walked the entire Webway. So did he like help? Has the Webway always been there and he's the one that opened it up? Who knows?
He's not even the god of the Webway. He's the dude that traveled. He got a stamp from every place in the Webway.
A much better way of putting it. Yeah.
He literally went, I have bing.
Well, good news. He's dead. So who cares?
He got he literally got the Steam achievement of being everywhere in the Webway. Got it.
Yep. Next one. Oh, I'm going to shit on this in a second. Is Kurnos, who's the god of the hunt. GW gender flipped Artemis. That's what it is. I do have an issue with this. Kurnos is always depicted with dogs and hawks. There are no dogs. Why are there dogs and hawks on Eldar planets? Like, why do the Eldar have a hawk? By the way, it's not like a weird looking hawk. It's just a hawk. So apparently the Eldar gods, when they were formed before, well, I guess technically you had birds 65 million years ago. It was a dinosaur.
How it worked out for the Eldar.
That's Kurnos is also the husband.
It's so sad about that.
It just does, because it's like there's just things where like you don't have to do it this way, and they do it, and I'm just like, Why do you have dogs and birds? Kurnos's key thing is that he is the husband of Isha.
That is basically his claim to fame.
That is his claim to fame. Well, and he has a daughter named Lilith, who is, well, actually, Isha and Kurnos's daughter, who is one of the, she might be one of the more important gods for Eldar.
Awesome.
Yeah, because, well, because she is, she's the god of foresight. So she's the whole reason Eldar can see into the future.
Farseers exist because she existed.
Because she existed. That? Although they are kind of bad at it sometimes.
Yes, but Eldrad's not.
Depends on the book. That's what I say. Like, I know you love Eldar, but I love Eldred. And I'm with you on Eldred, but Eldred seems to miss some predictions quite often.
Yes.
Like when you're standing in front of somebody who's corrupted by chaos.
Well, no.
And you could have.
He looks into the future, tries to adjust the future, but the way he tries to adjust it is terrible.
He was standing in front of all, like, was it Fulgrim?
Fulgrim.
Yeah. And yeah.
He definitely did not prepare his speech in the mirror.
Yeah, whiffed on that one hard. From there, we'll move on to Morai Heg, who, much like Gaea, was also the consort wife of the Asur-Yon and Cain. It's really weird. So I guess I think she's a side consort.
Yeah, but
she's important, though.
Yeah, but she's the Fates, but not quite the Fates. Mm-hmm.
She's a little bit different, yeah. So she's the god. She's a goddess of fate and souls. She was the goth of the gods, basically. She was really dour. But what she was doing was effectively more talking about more like Marvel universe type fates, where you're not necessarily tied to a strand.
Because she said
the strands can change, right. And you have these things.
It was also kind of encouraged on her. Like, what I got a lot from the things on that is that was the god that said, your fate is fate, but you can change your fate. Kind of encouraging people to be the best they can be, kind of thing.
Right.
But she was also the.
But also, fates. Your fate will come true. Because that's where she gets really confusing, because it's like, no, you don't have to do this. The fates aren't predetermined, but this thing is totally 100% going to happen no matter what you do.
Right.
You're not helpful.
It's kind of weird on that.
Yeah.
Because she's kind of the fate. Like I said, she's kind of the fates and kind of not.
And so, in my mind, you guys may figure at some point, I kind of like Greek history and Greek writing, also old Roman history and old Roman writing. So there's a lot of Sophocles stuff in this.
I mean, the Romans also really like Greek history and Greek writing.
Yeah.
So they demote half this stuff for themselves.
Yeah.
Like, that's cool. Bink.
Mine. Yeah, we'll rename it. But this is, if you read the Oedipus stories, that's got a lot of like the Moron High, where Oedipus did have some level of control over his life, but it was always going to end the way
it was. It's basically you can change the stream, but the river always ends up at the same place, kind of thing.
So, I mean, again, it is what it is. So another thing about Morai High is she's also known as the Crone, which is why Eldar, the lost worlds of the Eldar, are called the Crone Worlds. It's in reference to her. So that's where we get this from.
Kind of awesome. They spend not enough time on her. They reference her quite a bit.
They reference her a lot. There's just not a lot of like deep writing on it. But now we'll get to the last two, who are kind of the big ones, in my mind. Sigarak.
Well, only one of the gods got to pull the caper on Slaanesh.
And
that would be the laughing god. Mm-hmm.
So he is also the god the Harlequins worship, for obvious reasons, which is why he's so important. He's the trickster. There's actually a lot of great stories on Sigarak throughout both codexes, but also a lot of good Black Library writing about the way he was, that he would actually drive his enemies mad, but with the way he would do
that. He would lure them in. He's petty. It's funny because he's petty.
Oh, yeah.
But in a, you know, wildly crazy way, because he'll just mess with you in the smallest. There's great stories that written about how he would just kind of screw up the command people's every little bit about everything they did. Nothing was big deal.
Yeah.
But like, you're always out of your drink. You always tripped in the morning.
Exactly.
Paperwork's always jacked up. Your messages always kind of get sent or lost or whatever.
Yeah. Or cuts off in last half second is cut off. Just to annoy you.
Just constantly a little bit. And then he was told that's when you attack eventually. Mm-hmm. When you put your opponent on edge, then lightning strike, leave.
I mean, one of my favorite, I think he may not know it, but Ahriman's greatest foe in the entire universe is Sigarak. Because it's all Ahriman. all those stories of Aramont trying to pierce the webway, the way that it would always fall apart, it's obviously it was Segarach just messing with him. It wasn't Zeke.
He let Segarach. Him into the Black Library or around
almost the fake room of the Black Library. The amount of like, psych, they got pulled on him. Segarach, we're going to do a lot of time on, mostly because Brad and I both really like Harlequins a lot. So it's going to be some deep dives.
So downplayed.
Yeah.
The table.
That's because you can't. The truth is, I mean, just spoiler for the future, one solitaire, I beat your 2,000 point army.
Yeah.
he just runs across the board killing
it. And this is a big thing that we got to point out. When everything went down, when the fall came, the Laughing God effectively taunted Slaanesh and did a couple backflips and just deuced
into the webway, which is the one place that she cannot get into.
And that was a big deal on this, because the Laughing God just went, oh, shit's going down. I'll fight another day kind of thing. And not even just a straight, I mean, it sounds like running away, and I'm not really saying it now, but like.
No, he ran away.
The Laughing God went, I can't do anything about this right now.
Yeah, he didn't run away. He ran away. There's no positive on he ran away other than he was going to insta-die if he didn't run away. So you run away.
Also, a lot of Harlequins exist because of that.
It's a good move. He actually may have saved the Eldar, if I'm being completely honest. But speaking of saving the Eldar, what if they just all died? So there is a new god. Yeneed. So Yeneed is not part of the original Eldar pantheon. Yeneed has been birthed since then.
And it's so weird of how, because it's not just the deaths, it's the continued deaths of the same people, basically, because the infinity circuit. So right now, if you die and you're Eldar, your soul is instantly and irrevocably tied to Slaanesh. Slaanesh is the eater of souls, will get you. The Eldar set up what's called the Infinity Circuit, which is effectively where they host souls of their fallen comrades.
Yep.
In spirit gems.
And you wear it on you. So every Eldar, if you paint models, that's what's on the model right there. That gem in the middle that most of us don't paint because it's work. But anyway, that's what that gem is. When you die, that gem grabs your soul. Then the Eldar collect the souls afterwards, just kind of with the Space Marines with the gene seed. But this is a bit more complex. They bring it back to the craft world and it's loaded into the Infinity Circuit there. From that Infinity Circuit, we can actually take that and load you into a Wraith host, which we're going to cover in the next episode. Don't worry. But it's a really key piece. All this cycle, though, of death and pain, you then take all those dead souls, you load them into an Infinity Circuit. So there's now millions, billions of souls together. Yeah. That birthed a god. That's the best way to explain it. That birthed a god, and it's a god of death. And we're going to spend a lot of time on the good thing about Yunari is we're going to spend a bunch of time on it and then have a cliffhanger ending GW just decided
they're going to mic drop it and nothing's going to happen.
Exactly. So
Bobby G got buffed up and Yavrain and Bobby G walked into the night and only Bobby G apparently.
Returned. So there we are.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
It's time to accept it. The holidays are upon us and finding gifts for people is never easy or really fun. Luckily, we at the 40K Lorecast have a new sponsor, which will help you make your holiday shopping fast and easy. Uncommon Goods makes holiday shopping stress-free and joyful with thousands of one-of-a-kind gifts you can't find anywhere else. Add some personalization to your holiday shopping with Uncommon Goods. Did I go there and buy the game Fart Bingo? Yeah, I did. Is it for my child to play with his friends? We'll go with yeah. At the same time, I was able to get a cocktail smoker. So yeah, those are probably all for me. Anyway, that's what's great about Uncommon Goods. They have uncommon, get it, collection of items you can choose from, allowing you to pick up a fun variety of items this holiday season. You'll find thousands of gift ideas that you won't find anywhere else. So, shop early, have fun, and cross some names off your list today. To get 15% off your next gift, go to uncommongoods.com/40klore. 40KLORE. That's uncommongoods.com/40KLORE for 15% off. Don't miss out on this limited time offer. Uncommon Goods. We're all out of the ordinary. There are actually three other gods that we're not going to cover here because it's the gods of the Exodites. And I'll just let Brad scream into a room on that one.
Exodites are awesome.
Yeah, they're not. I grossly disagree on Exodites, but that's me.
Yeah, it's because you don't like dinosaurs.
They're not even dogs. They're supposed to be dragons. It's the don't. It, okay. Anyway. It's just like, do it or don't do it, GW. That's where I'm at. So, Eldar gods. So, did they create the Eldar?
No.
Let's do the story.
I know. Okay. We'll do the story.
We'll do the story and we can just crap all over it and rewrite
it. And this is, I got to get this up front. Yeah. I got to preface this with, this is wildly just my opinion.
Oh, yeah. What you're about to say?
Yeah. Yeah. 100%.
Yeah, so the story of the Eldar gods starts with the Eldar being a race of perfection. So they were meant to be intelligent, powerful, compassionate, joyous, and creative. These were not the way they were formed originally. These were then given to them. And you're all immediately thinking the same thing. Well, that's what the old ones did. So you're talking about the old ones. And it's like, no.
Technically, no. Eldar were raised up by the old ones. They weren't created by the old ones.
And that's where this all gets confusing, really confusing, really quick. Because some people may be thinking, well, the Eldar gods are just old ones. No, the old ones weren't this powerful. That's the Eldar gods are much more. I mean, maybe some of them survived, but so they never explain like how any of this was done. But we do know that at some point there were two brothers named Eldanesh and Ulthanesh. Way to go, JW, on your naming. And from those two, all the Eldar were created. Don't worry, this is going to get really complicated.
I know, it's just funny because we're doing the Romulus. Yeah.
Yeah, it's Romulus and Remus. Yeah. It's going to be, yeah, there's no wolf here yet. And don't worry, this is about to get really confusing. So you might, and it's going to require a lot of really crisp pronunciation on the part of Brad and I. So you have to keep track. So my bad. Anyway, so the Eldar are created, and the Eldar gods decide to uplift them. And
because we don't know who created the Eldar. In the writing, if somebody can find some obscure piece where they say this, it's just.
Yeah, I'd love to see. Drop in Discord. I'd love to see it. I went through all the codexes. I didn't see anything in codex. I haven't read all the Black Library, obviously, but I've read a good amount of it. Effectively, the Eldar just do exist. This would in some ways line up with the rest of the writing that the old ones did uplift them from whatever they were into a larger being. I think a lot of this is the Eldar gods. Right, I'm going to give you my opinion. I think what ends up happening here, what we're about to discuss, is what happened to the Eldar after the old ones disappeared. Because they would have had leadership, and then leadership disappeared. And then be them demon princes, be them Eldar, long-lived Eldar who powered up, the following begins to happen. So the first piece is Asarion gives the Eldar the gift of wisdom. So this is, and they call it so that they would know themselves and their purpose.
Isha gives them love.
Yeah.
So because, they, of course.
You need to have love. This is so they would know each other and stand together as a race. That was the idea. This way, they're a knowledgeable race who have a purpose, sometimes a little bit too OCD than the purpose, but that purpose is also
a little.
But what Isha then does is she comes in and gives them the purpose of taking care of themselves and others. And then Lilaeth actually gives them joy so that they would be happy or would pursue happiness.
Oh, I was just about to say, no, that's where you're correct. She gives them the pursuit of joy, but the way the Eldar are made, the pursuit of joy becomes OCD times a million in anything that they do. Yep. And some of these things become
not great. And we're probably going to get into some of the other little issues that pop in. So the next one that they get is Vol. So Vol gives them what's called the artifice. This is the way that Eldar can manifest physical things from the warp. Like we're going to talk about.
And this is
Wraithbone.
Yeah, this is. He's given the. Basically giving, I get my cheat together. Vol gives them the artifice. Is this technology? Because they use technology with their magic, their psychics, to create things. Is he giving them that tech? Is he giving them that ability psychically, teaching them? Is he teaching them a spell? This is where it gets kind of weird because you don't know, are they have this right away? Because eventually they wraith sing. They do wraith bone. But their initial, when the Elder Society was running at top peak, they could think things into being because they also used technology to do it. It wasn't, they just used magic.
Well, yeah, but this gave them the ability to advance their race massively because the whole, like Wraithbone is critical.
This is the one that was really confusing for me because I didn't know where it was. Like,
oh.
Because eventually this is what they do. is this what he gave them right away? Or is this something that they just discovered later on?
Oh, I see your point. Yeah. I have no idea actually on that one.
That's why it's confusing on this. Cause you're like, if they didn't have the technology right away, is he giving him in that? And that's my issue with that. And I don't want to get super.
It's fine. We're going to do a lot of diatribes this one and a lot of side stuff they'll be doing here. Koronos gave the Eldar desire. This way they would strive to prosper and succeed. So basically, Koronos with Illith, that's what screwed the Eldar up.
I mean, they kind of made him psychos about
things. Yeah, that was the one too.
The Eldar, again, hyper, hyper focused when they get something. Also, they don't take L's very well.
No.
Because they feel everything so hard. They are real big on wins and they really dwell on their losses. Also, hey, if you live for thousands upon thousands of years, got a lot of time to dwell on that.
And you have a memory forever. You can remember every bad thing you've ever done. Shame of all of us. Morai Haig gave them foresight. Could have been a lot clearer foresight. Like, hey, this is exactly what's going to happen if you do something, but didn't do that.
I also I think that she gave them the ability to use their warp touch mm-hmm. to try to do this.
That's true.
So it's up to them to hone their senses.
My favorite one of them all, and this is just from the writing, is Cain. Cain gave the Eldar anger.
Yeah.
That's what it wrote down. Gift. That was his gift. His gift was he gave them anger. They wrote it well. It's not to just to be mean. It's actually to make it to give them even greater levels of success. Cain's whole idea was to Brad's thing is we're going to give them the desire for joy. We're going to give them the desire for knowledge. We're going to take all of that and the desire for perfection. And then we're going to give you anger and hate for every time it doesn't work out.
Even a little bit. Yeah. Anytime it's not perfect, mm-hmm. you are going to feel overwhelming anger.
Yeah. And so that was his real helpful gift. Anger. Now, I will say this one's really held through. Modern day Eldar are really embracing the Cain elements of some stuff when things come up. So anyway, back to those two brothers we mentioned earlier. As the Eldar grew, the gods were actually with them. Like not growing them, with them, walking around with them. The Eldar actually went to war with their gods. Isha stood next to the Eldar and showed them how to build worlds.
Which is, again, why my view of this is mm-hmm. that they were just super powered Eldar.
Yeah, you're probably right. I just like them being.
I know, but they princess. Were like they were again there. Yeah. When you can go, hey, let me talk to my God. You're like, are you going to commune with him? I'm like, I'm going to walk over right there and ask him because he's making toast right now.
Yeah, and it was a weird moment for the Eldar at this time because they just begin conquering the galaxy. Nothing can stand in their way. Because remember, the Necrons are gone. Nothing else. Slaanesh, we got 64 million years between, this all beginning and Slaanesh being born. So, and there's nothing really written about the time, just that the Eldar went to war. There were some random races that the Eldar did go to war with that's mentioned in about one sentence in a codex, but
every single thing that they met since the Necrons, they smoked.
Yeah, and they fought together. And what happened was the Eldar and the Eldar god Pantheon were really hand in hand. Asur-Yahn was helping them out. Cain was going to battle with them. Isha was teaching them healing. All this stuff was going on until Lilith, so the daughter again of Isha and Koronos, who has foresight, had a bad dream. And in her dream, she saw the Eldar destroying Cain. And she told Cain this. Cain
doesn't take it really well. Well,
Cain realizes that Illith has the gift of foresight, so he's going to solve this problem by killing every single Eldar that exists. This is the level of Greek mythology, and this is incredible. So the Eldar, so as he's just ripping through them, Isha and Koronos just go to Asur-Yahn and say, you have to stop this. He's going to kill every single one of them. To which Cain is going, yeah, it's exactly what I'm going to do. I'm not angry and lashing out. I am on a purpose right now. Asur-Yahn steps in. And what Asur-Yahn says is, well, the Eldar can't kill us if they can't access us. So we're going to separate the Eldar.
I feel he put the gods in the warp.
Yeah, and that's one way of looking at it.
I mean, that's just what it looks like. For me, he put the gods into the warp as the Chaos Gods are. The Chaos Gods can access things. They can see, and they can access when they're asked, basically. But that's what I got.
Well, then I'll John theory this. I bet you this is probably at the point where the chaos gods are starting to actually form. And so that because I think that they're warp entities, they then got pulled into the Immaterium, away from the Materium.
Possibly us on that.
And that's, you know, because us are, you know, king killing, all these things. So what this does is this leads to what's called the splitting of the pantheon. So the Eldar and the Eldar gods are separated. The Eldar continue on their normal ways of doing their normal stuff. They're growing, they're expanding, they're baking, whatever they're doing, right? The Chaos gods are just sitting in the pantheon, now well protected from the Eldar. Except Isha and Karanos just couldn't handle this.
Well, their whole purpose in life is to be part of the Eldar society.
Yep.
To be to guide, to nurture, to love, but also they're not getting anything unless they're there. So they aren't just ideas. They want to be part of this. So this is one of my favorites because they go to Vol and they say, hey, we can't do this. And Vol's like, I can't possibly do it. You know, I was told not to. And then they give the super easy speech of, come on.
What if we say please? At which point Vol goes, okay.
All right.
And Vol creates the spirit stones, which come up a lot more later, obviously. And now, through the spirit stones, Isha and Kuranos are able to converse back with the Eldar again. Now, problem with that is Big Angry Cain is wandering around and walks in on, it doesn't say if it's Asuryan or Isha or both, talking to the Eldar. But yeah, he's pretty pissed.
This part of the story is
just weird.
Fucked.
Yeah.
To be honest, because he bitches Dasrian in the world's weirdest story flip.
Mm-hmm.
He's like, hey, I said I wouldn't smoke all of them if no one could talk to him. By the way, this is the pettiest shit of all time.
Yeah.
He's like, if they can talk to him, you know, I'm going to go smoke him. And then for somehow this argument gets settled by, how about if you just own the two goddesses? You're like,
God and goddess.
God and goddess.
Yeah, I'm gonna hand you. Asuryan just hands over Isha and Kuranos to Cain to do with him what he wants, and what he wants is torture them.
It's
like
so
at a level that the Drukhari
this is
would
in
go
the writing, and it still just ew. Makes no sense.
Yeah. And so he spends an unknown amount of time just very loudly torturing these two to the point where the other gods are kind of like, hey.
Yeah, this is weird.
This dude. Is awkward. Can someone make it stop? And so, don't worry, story's going to get weirder. So Vol decides that it's still technically a little bit his fault this whole thing went down. So he goes to Cain and says, look, you got to stop doing this. And Cain says, no, I'm the god of vengeance and torture. This is my purpose. No. Vol offers to make Cain 100 swords. The level here of this being just dumb mythology is bothering me, but this is the story, so we're doing it.
I mean, these end up being the most powerful weapons in the galaxy, but continue.
Fine. Well, that's right, because he does make it later. So
it does. I mean, they cut through space and time.
But the rest of the story is just annoying. So Vol offers to make Cain 100 of his special swords. And Vol's swords are, as Brad just said, the most powerful things in the galaxy. So Cain says yes, but then gives him a timetable of 1 year. Because apparently the pantheon of the Eldar gods revolves around the sun. So they only get a year. It's just this random measurement of time for no reason. Well, the year goes by and the clock is ticking down and Vol has only made 99 of his special swords. So he then grabs one of his rando extras and throws it in with 100.
This is legit the story.
I'm just giving you guys the story. It's still weird. Brad's just making his faces because I can see him. He's following on going like, I got nothing to add to this because it's a dumb story.
I'm waiting for us to get past this because I love the Eldar, but this part of it makes no sense.
So anyway, Cain takes 100 swords, releases Isha and Kuranos. They go back. Anyway, obviously, Cain later discovers that one of his 100 swords is BS and freaks the hell out. like real freaks out and just goes on. And so this leads to what's ends up being called the War in Heaven. Now, it's not called War in Heaven Part 2, which is what I'm calling it. So we had the War in Heaven before, which was obviously old ones, Necrons, Satans, etc. This one is just all of the gods in heaven fighting each other. Vol on one side, Kane on the other.
It's like super short.
Maybe.
Yeah, that's true. We don't have a timeline, but how about this? The story is really short.
Yeah, the story's a paragraph. All the gods in heaven begin fighting. Eventually, the war culminates with Kane and Vol meeting in combat. Vol walks into the battle carrying his greatest sword ever, which is a Naris. Problem is, Vol's a forge master. Kane's the god of war. Kane beats Vol to a pulp.
Like bad, bad.
Yeah. But while Vol is lying there.
A big thing, he does cripple Vol.
I forgot about that. Oh, I totally forgot about that. He cripples Vol. Anyway, while he's doing, he then bends down to pick up the sword and a bird. Yep. A bird, because of a Naris, flies in, grabs the sword of a god, and takes it down to one of those two brothers you mentioned earlier named Eldanish, who are still around. Who
also, why?
Yeah. So you now have
dick move bird,
yeah,
as a mortal gets handed a sword of the gods, not real sure why.
Yeah.
And the god of war shows up and he's like, I don't even know what's happening right
and
now.
And also, that god of war really wants that sword.
Which you have no idea about,
by the way. Yeah, you're just holding it. It's
you're
right.
Just
yeah.
Standing
yeah.
there going, what? Like this was just, I don't know what Eldanish did to that bird, but that bird did not like him.
No,
he
yeah,
just went, hey, man, hold this.
Yeah, can you hold this for a minute? And so Kane just rips Eldanish to pieces. The positive here is at this moment, Asaryan goes, all right, like,
well, no, he hardcore comes down.
Yeah, well, because he's like,
it's his like chosen of the Eldar. He that just gets smoked, and he's like, apparently, I was super cool with you torturing other gods.
You can torture my relatives.
Yeah. Whoa! I like that particular person, mortal, and comes down and just goes no, and just hits him with the squirt bottle.
Yep. And Kane takes his latest sword. And just leaves.
Yeah, because he got sprayed with a spray bottle. He wasn't allowed to be on the counter. Yep.
So after this, the Eldar, that's the end of the story of the Pantheon.
It's also this is why we spent way too much time on this one, because it's a paragraph.
It's a paragraph.
But it's two paragraphs.
It's a paragraph, actually. But it keeps coming up later. And that's true why story. I wanted to cover into it, because it does matter later. Because now we're going to fast forward anywhere.
But I think that they spoiled the point of this story. I have to bring it back.
Yep.
You know, I lied on the... So I will give the story its due, because this, in my mind, poisoned the Eldar.
Yeah.
This conflict is what set the stage for the downfall, the fall of the Eldar.
Exactly, because I think what this story talks about is the Eldar gods were not unified, even into protecting each other. And what creates a downfall of the Eldar is this, like, I think if the Eldar had been like the Necron tier, where they just went, they were happy just to slaughter the entire galaxy and advance themselves, no Slaanesh, or maybe little Slaanesh.
Well, it was the
Eldar's ability to turn on each other is what created
it. Turn on each other to think that each other are nothing. If it wasn't you, it's nothing to you.
Mm-hmm.
This is what made it so that they got the pleasure cults, the ability to just be okay with torturing each other for shits and giggles, do horrible things. But also another reason they had to turn in, because there was no war. I don't think the Eldar actually fall if they have rivals, but they don't.
Yeah, the Eldar fell due to boredom. So, and to that point, that's what happens. The Eldar entered a time of peace, sort of, in the sense that there were no external threats. And internally, there were no threats. They just got weird. So until... they get weird enough that Slaanesh is born.
And this is millions of...
Yeah, 60 million. We don't know how many millions of years. But
we don't know what the time period... It's 64, 64 million years from Necron Wars till the current...
Till this.
Yeah,
till and this. The first Homo sapiens about 1 million years old.
Yeah.
So 60 times that amount of time. And they started well ahead of
cave. They were flying around in spaceships.
Yeah, yeah. This is way better than Lucy.
But the biggest thing is we don't know how long this is going on, because Eldar... effectively conquer the galaxy. Actually, they don't even do the whole galaxy. They just get
bored. They get bored. Yeah, they get to a certain point.
Like, they get to a certain point and go, we are the kings of the universe. Mm-hmm. Nothing can touch us. And to that point in that claim, they're not wrong.
Nope.
And nothing that
until
they...
Until they make something that yeah. can.
Well, this is the thing is they also... This goes into, if anybody knows the Elric stories, mm-hmm. where they're on the island of Meliponian, where they basically... don't even realize that they're not the rulers of everything anymore. This is kind of what the Eldar did. Because leading up to this, humanity is conquering the galaxy, and the Eldar kind of know about it, kind of don't, but they're so, I just don't care.
Because the thing was, as humanity is conquering the galaxy, they're not doing it in a way that's a threat to the Eldar. The Eldar can sense the technology. And this is, again, not Great Crusade. We're talking age of technology when the yep. humankind were actually more advanced. And the Eldar went, yeah, that's not a threat. They just didn't care. If they get close enough, we'll flick them and they'll go away.
And they're so only mm-hmm. care about their immediate wants, needs, and their wants and needs of torture and craziness for most of the civilization.
While this is going on, though, and the Eldar are doing things, the Eldar Pantheon does exist, and there is some limited interaction between the Eldar Pantheon and the Eldar until Slaanesh's birth. And this is a really important one. In an instant, Slaanesh is born. Slaanesh was not born piece by piece with like a conquering force in the galaxy. At birth, Slaanesh goes. And Slaanesh probably had sentience before her birth, but at her birth, she knew where to go first.
Instantly lashes out.
Yeah. She kills Ossaryon, Lilith, Morai Haig, like that. Hoek and Guy, well, I assume, are also dead.
She exploded the sky.
Yeah.
The Eye of Terror is the center of the Eldar yeah. civilization.
So she kills all of them. She absorbs anything in the realm nearby is now in the Immaterium. The only two gods that actually are that hold up are, as we said, Segarak, who just looks at this and goes, nope, and runs away.
Into the webway.
Yeah, Kane actually does stand up and fights Slaanesh for an instant or two.
And then gets shattered.
But this is important. Ossaryon, Lilith, Morai, they don't exist.
No, Cain gets,
yeah,
actually will not. He's like, yeah, yeah. Place on the table.
He's
like, full on a moss fucking.
Yeah, he's full of rage. And so, this is really critical because there's a model called the Avatar of Cain, and we're going to explain how it exists right now. Slaanesh consumed the soul of Ossaryon. That's gone, Lilith. Cain wouldn't let that happen, stood and fought. And so when Slaanesh reached out and struck Cain to kill him, Cain split up into these little crystals.
Almost infinite amount of crystals throughout the galaxy.
So to this day, when an Autarch is, the need is most dire, they can actually take one of these shards they're carrying and they will turn into an avatar of Cain. That's what it comes from.
It's a ceremony, almost like a sign. Yeah. It's basically a summoning ceremony.
It's a summoning ceremony where they summon what is not a demon, but totally a demon, that is Cain. There are a couple other who did survive. We said Segarath. Isha was about to get consumed, as we covered in our cast on Nurgle. Nurgle goes, yeah, no, that one's mine. And Nurgle grabs Isha. So Isha is also alive and sitting within Nurgle's compound.
Super bummed, by the way.
Yeah. And Yanid has been birthed since. So the note I left here, did that all make sense? Hopefully it did. If it didn't, I spent a lot of time writing these notes. I don't know how to make that clearer than it was. So there you go. So let's shift a little bit to, and this will help us set more of the stage, what Eldar was like leading up to the fall. Because it wasn't all creepy murder and torture cults.
100% it was.
Yeah. I mean, they had mastered the warp, and I actually would argue, I think they may have been better at the warp getting as we got closer to the end.
I think they perfected it. I think the old ones made the webway.
Yeah.
But the.
Oh, I'm talking the warp. I'm talking about, I think the Eldar.
Mastered the use of the warp.
Yeah.
At the pinnacle of their society, because this is a big thing that people don't realize about the Eldar, even in the game and the lore right now. The Eldar won't use the maximum of their powers.
No,
because they
know Slaanesh just appears.
Correct. Yeah. They used to be able to make things exist by thought through their mastery of the warp, mm-hmm. but their mastery of the warp with their tech. Their tech basically worked. Yeah. All Eldar tech is it's basically like elven tech. It, you know what I mean? Yeah. Like you do in fantasy where the elves sing to the trees in nature and make things happen. Eldar do that with technology and their Wraithbone technology and their tech. They could just make the warp make things. They don't do that anymore. They sing to the Wraithbone and stuff, but they used to just force things into existence.
Yeah, now there's a bit more of a somewhat manufacturing process. Right. They're still using it, but it's different.
Yeah, but they were just straight up making
reality. And let's talk about Wraithbone for a minute, because Wraithbone is the material that's in everything the Eldar use. Yep. And it's effectively warp energy that's weaved into being a physical.
But it's effectively almost like living tissue because it regenerates.
Yeah, not in the game.
Well, no, it used to, kind of.
They've had some rules. Some of them have. Like, actually, that's true, because Wraithlords can self-repair a little bit. But the Wraithbone is the key thing to the Eldar, and it is maybe the strongest element in the universe in the lore, again. The Eldar also, at this point, kind of master, they become almost immortal. They were already long-lived, but thanks to soul stones and some other technology, they become...
Well, before they were psychos, Eldar would just... They had full-on reincarnation anyways.
Yeah.
You would just go back into the Eldar, spirits.
I tried to write something in here about the life cycle of the Eldar, and after, like, losing my mind trying to read it, I just gave up on it. Because
they used to have... they have a closed circuit now, which is the Infinity
Circuit. Yeah.
But it used to just be how they live. They go...
Eventually, once an Eldar reached like 2,000 years old, they would eventually die of old age. And then they would get recycled back. They didn't even need an Infinity Circle. They would just get recycled back into another Eldar that is born. But at the same time,
there was also a lot of birthing
Eldar.
Well, there was also a lot of talk of whether or not you kept all of their... knowledge or not. It's all over the place on that. But the biggest thing on this is once they got into the crazy pleasure cults and stuff, Eldar just didn't want to die, period.
Well, the problem is, this is where I think led to the pleasure cults, is the fact that the pleasure cults could exist because they actually weren't killing. No. That was the thing. Like, and a pleasure cult would kill an Eldar, they just recycle. So you had that excuse where, like, I just murdered that person.
Meaningless to you.
Yeah, I murdered this person, right? But then they just got reborn like 40 minutes later.
I kind of already didn't care, but also it really didn't matter.
Yeah, and so that's also how those pleasure cults get to be even more excessive in their psychosis. The other one too at this time is the Eldar, and I keep using the word sort of, mastered Farsight. They had the ability. This is where the real birth of the Farseers comes up. It was all the seers.
They were wildly great at this when they were determining what things that were going to happen, celestial events that were going to happen, planets that they could go get. They predicted when and where things would be ready for them as an Eldar to settle things of that nature.
Yeah, that's true. Because one thing, and we're going to get to it in a little bit, the Eldar never actually... They do use a little bit of warp travel now, but they didn't really use warp travel. They use faster than light drives. So the problem is that when you had to go somewhere, they had to know where they were going was worth getting to. And so that's where the Farsight was used a lot. Also, when they would go to war, this power was incredible because they would effectively fire artillery at where the enemy was about to be. The enemy would just be doing some sneaky move, like, oh, we're going to sneak around this mountain, then attack. And as you come around the mountain, behind the mountain, all the Eldar artillery hits you and you die.
They do this in space battles and stuff like that. Yeah. People coming out of the warp would just go, bummer.
You wouldn't come out of the warp and then they would shoot at you. You'd come out of the warp to the shots that have already been fired. And it just was like, I guess we're done here.
But they were wildly accurate as far as, these are the worlds we want. These are the times where things are going to work out. Celestial events, things like that. Effectively, if they wanted to colonize a word, they would have Farseers look into the future and go, how is this world going to be there if we leave now, tomorrow, whatever?
Right.
You know, where do we go? And they would just go there. And so, they would web-way it up.
So at the end of this, the Eldar, as we're getting towards the fall, they cannot really die. They reincarnate. They cannot want for anything. Same thing they want, they just create. And there's no enemies worth fighting because they fight, they auto win. And that last one, I want to point something out. Eldar didn't fight with Eldar. That's the last piece there. Whereas, like, humanity has revolutions. Even the Tau actually have revolutions. Orcs constantly fight within themselves. Tyranids don't. But whatever. But for the most part, all the other races that exist within the galaxy.
Destroyed each other.
Yeah, have some interest. Eldar didn't until we get, so then things begin to get weird. And effectively, and we've covered the pleasure cults before, they go nuts here. And they just start killing each other and torturing each other and doing worse. We're going to have a very fun cast on Drukhari in the future about where they came from. And yeah, they kept on.
But all of this doesn't happen like instantaneously. So all
no,
of this
stuff, is millennia.
It's going
more
on.
Than.
It's more than millions.
Millions, yeah.
So these pop up. They're starting to happen. And they are looking for, the Farseers are looking for, their sensing of the future. They're foreboding. They're saying what their portents are. Things are going to be bad in the future.
We should
do something about this. And for, again, hundreds of thousands of years, they start to plan this.
They do. And one of the key problems is, like, I realize people may not remember the episode we did before on this. The pleasure cult started just kind of like anything. Just it was a small subsect of the populace. At some point, the pleasure cults infected the nobility of the Eldar.
And then it became a big deal.
And at this point, now the entire civilization is shifting this way. So what you get is a movement away. So some people, so kind of three groups, three groups come in. So right. The first group is run away.
You have to do why?
Yeah.
Because GW had heavy fisted it in a good way. And the thing is, they gave the whole ultimate power corrupts ultimately. You know what I mean? And they did, because when you are effectively immortal, you have no one who can do anything to you. And also there's no ramifications for their actions at this point.
None. Well, none that they're,
that they know of.
Exactly. Well, the Farseers knew of it. But the ones who are living day to day don't care. So three groups emerge. First, the ones who run off immediately, the Exodites, which we're going to cover in a second. The next one is the ones who take big ships and kind of try to save. Yeah. Oh, yeah. I'm underselling big. And the last one are actually the ones who tried to convince everyone the errors of their ways. And we're going to cover the last ones actually all died. So anyway.
they're gone now.
Yeah. So two of the three. So the first one we'll talk about is what I consider one of the more controversial aspects of the Eldar lore, which is the Exodites. It's controversial in that, much like they did with the Yunari, the Eldar wrote about the Exodites for a while and then one day just stopped. I'm pretty sure this is because at some point in the early 90s, they had a bring your kid to work day and that kid got all hopped up a Mountain Dew and caught some exhibit at the Natural History Museum, because during the fall of the Eldar, these Exodites found dinosaurs / dragons, depending on which model. The Exodites are modeled as Eldar, carrying blight bright lances and either riding on dragons or just straight up dinosaurs.
They literally strapped bright lances to the heads of flying dinosaurs.
Yeah.
And it was awesome.
It was awesome. It makes no sense.
Step away from the dinosaur with a bright lance, John. Yeah. Step away from it.
Okay. If you want to see some very, very fun 3D printed models, people have had a good time with this over the years, and there's some amazing stuff out there. Absolutely amazing stuff out there. But yeah, the Exodites just disappeared effectively from Eldar lore, though, in more modern codexes.
Yes, but they still write about Crone worlds and Exodite worlds. They just don't talk about them as much as they used to.
Yeah, because of the dinosaur thing. And it's because every time, and to be fair, this is actually because people who play Warhammer are funny. And anytime GW ever mentions an Exodite, they get bombarded with nothing but questions of, are we getting models? Are we getting models? When are we getting models? Like, I will buy the entire army. Can I pre-buy the army?
I feel like you didn't hear me with flying dinosaurs.
And I'll be
honest, with bright lances strapped to their heads.
That's, if they brought the Exodites back into the game and they were like, oh, we're doing a starter box, I would camp out of the store.
I was just about to say, you were talking shit about this. No, you would 100% get this.
I would actually, they would assume I was a scalper at the amount of boxes I'd be buying, and they'd all be for personal consumption.
We'll be right back after a quick break.
So anyway, the Exodites leave first, and what they do is they just kind of shoot off all throughout the galaxy in kind of smaller groups. They're more like the pilgrims. Yeah.
Which is, it's funny because when we say they're going in smaller groups, these are still gigantic groups. We're talking about a huge civilization, but it's small groups that aren't huge like we're going to see in Craft World, stuff like that.
Yeah.
But we're going into these groups, small groups, which end up being full planets worth of people.
Yeah. I mean, there's billions of souls. The Exodites kind of went off. I mean, I view it as more almost like some like, like a rogue trader, in that there's some were small ships, some were bigger ships.
It was all over the place.
They just grabbed the ship and left, like a lifeboat. Yeah,
exonates were everything between 1,000 to 150,000 to million.
Millions.
No one knows. Every exodite world was X amount of people that went, you guys are crazy, we're the hell out of here. And they left wildly before.
And they also went wildly far. The thing was, is that most of...
they were trying to get beyond the scope of the Eldar Empire.
That's why. The Eldar craft worlds are still in what's considered Eldar space. It's obviously not the space that the Slaanesh took over. But you'll hit exodites on like the far northern, southern, eastern, like all the way on the fringe world, which is actually what's kind of funny when... You know, if you think about, just to go back to a rogue trader episode, you're a rogue trader exploring. You could hit Tau, you could hit Orc, you could hit Tyranid, or you could hit Exodite, which actually might be one of the worst of those because you won't know you hit them. You just get blown out of the sky instantly because the Exodites are not like we talking about. Like Brad likes to tease by the Amish of the Eldar, but they're not Amish like the Amish. And those of you who aren't in the U.S., Google the Amish. It's too hard to explain on a cast. But anyway. Like, they're not, like, against technology.
Oh, no.
They've got bright lances, all of the bright lances. They will blast you out of the sky in a second.
Yeah. Also, they're kind of big on leave me the hell alone.
Yeah.
Because some of them aren't 100% sure on what's going on in the rest of the galaxy.
Yeah. And they just, and they're very in tune with corruption is something that I'm not going to let anywhere near me. And if you're not me, you could be corruption. So therefore, you don't get to be there anyway.
And the Eldar have been... kind of real dicks about, well, there's Eldar, and then there's just not Eldar. Mm-hmm.
So the next group is, of course, the ones who, and we're going to craft worlds, and like the next one we're going to cover after this is craft worlds, but we're getting to craft worlds, how they tried to save the Eldar. Then there were the ones who stayed behind to try and sit there and say, hey, everybody, stop doing this. This is wrong.
And you had ups and downs of this, because they had a couple weird stories about random Eldar people, no one got a foothold.
Yeah, they all died. Oh, crap. There actually is one more. The Drukhari. They do survive this. We'll cover that.
They were basically the old Empire, though.
Yes, the Drukhari are the old Eldar. That's what this is. But they did survive because of, and we'll get to Kamara in a minute. But anyway, let's, at this point, to kind of set the stage for modern 40K, get into the craft worlds, because these are... in the history and the lore of the Eldar is maybe the most important. So first off, craft worlds were not built for the fall. They predated the fall. They've always had craft worlds.
Yes and no. Yes. Yes, they have.
Yeah, they've always had
but
them.
But they...
They tuned them up.
They tuned them up. Yes. I mean, and this happened because craft worlds weren't, hey, everybody get on a craft world. Shit's about to go down. Yeah. Craft worlds were super unhappy with Eldar society. And we're going to take billions of Eldar. And again, when you said the ships were large, big. Well,
let's go back to the original. That's what they did with them. The original craft worlds were actually effectively trading and colonization vessels. Because as we said, the Eldar have the webway, which allows them to commute to move within Eldar worlds.
Well, it has to be anything that the webway is built in.
Exactly. So you can't just go somewhere where there's no webway.
But you could go somewhere and then attach it to the webway.
Exactly.
Which is what they did.
Yeah, but they had to do that. And the Eldar didn't have warp travel at this stage. It's actually unclear if they did or did not, but it just says that they really didn't use it. So these ships were all faster than life ships. The reason that matters is that an Eldar craft world would go on these trading and colonization missions, and they would come back to Eldar space like once every 200 years. Yeah.
Craft worlds are... worlds.
Yeah, they are worlds. We're not talking about a trading vessel. We're talking about a million people, potentially more, on a ship with their own
fleet. They're effectively flying Earths around.
With their own fleet.
Yeah.
And so what ended up happening is these vessels are coming and going. Actually, really, we're trying to describe them. Just play Mass Effect. It's the Quarians. That's effectively what these things they are. Because not even a craft world also... It's usually got one main ship, but it's actually also a collection. It's a fleet.
The craft world's the craft world, but there's a fleet of ships around it.
It is the Quarians from Mass Effect.
Because every other ship that's around the craft world, there's a bunch of, fighting ships, but there's also a bunch of refueling ships, everything else.
Yeah, you have your freighters, you've got your battleships, you've got everything you would need.
You have mining ships and stuff like that.
I mean, they took this, obviously Mass Effect took this from 40K. Yes. And 40K probably took this from early English colonialism, where you would send tens of thousands of, maybe thousands of people to, well, Australia, to all our listeners there. You guys, you know where you guys came from. Anyway, but that's what it was. So the craft world, because they spent so much time away, a key thing that I, and it was funny, I didn't occur to me until I was doing the research for this. They noticed the Eldar descent and decadence, which it realized, of course, if you were living in one of the true Eldar homeworlds, it's the old phrase, how do you boil a frog? You do it slowly. You put the frog in the water and you add the heat. And then eventually that the frog never notices that it's boiling around them. That's what was happening on the Eldar homeworlds. As these cults of pleasure got more and more decadent, it wasn't overnight. It was over a million years.
Yeah, but for the craft worlds, it looked
weird. Yeah, the craft worlds come back after a thousand years. Like, what are you all doing?
It is
doing?
1,000% the Danny Glover meme.
Oh, yeah, the Glover meme.
Like, when he just walks in with the pieces and goes,
what the hell is wrong with you people?
Also, if you don't know what that is, Google it. It's hilarious.
You have to know what that meme is. The guy holding pizza and the room's on fire. You have to have seen that meme. Anyway, the Eldar craft worlds realize at a certain point in their back and forths, they have to do something because the Eldar seers are going nuts and they're just saying,
well, every single one of them. I mean, some of them are just dying.
Yeah.
Because they're looking into a future where the Eldar civilization is effectively snuffed out because mm-hmm. it is at the core of it. And they're telling, they're nonstop. Well, the craft worlds, the ones that we now know as the craft worlds,
because right.
a lot of the craft worlds got
they didn't
snuffed
make it.
Out. Yeah. Yep. But for these craft worlds, they start specifically getting a plan to, we need to get the hell out of here. You guys are too weird.
Yeah. The Eldar seers are able to see in the future that not only is their civilization going to collapse, but it's going to be like a cataclysmic event where anyone anywhere near the Eldar homeworlds will get killed.
They don't know this as far as
they don't know it's slain.
To be fair, they don't know that it's going to rip apart space and time right. and. But they right. think
they know they can't be here.
Right.
We are
something
currently.
Something is going yeah. to happen. Are we going to fight amongst ourselves? Are we going to invite mm-hmm. this? Or they don't know what it is. It's just going to be a civilization ending event is going to yeah. happen. And we need to just get the hell out of here. But also we want to continue our specific Eldar way of life. And this is different for each of the craft worlds.
Too. Right. And so the craft worlds, and we'll get more into them in the next cast, that deep dive into each individual craft world. But what the craft worlds do is they decide to kind of Noah's Ark this situation, where they're going to all just traveling to all the Eldar homeworlds.
I mean, I know we're going to go into the next, but yeah. it is important to tell everybody that they're not just grabbing people that are not cool with Eldar society. They're grabbing their focused yes, yeah. view of
exactly. people. Well, because there's a webway. It's a nice thing. So if you park a craft world in a position, anyone who agrees with that craft world now can use the webway to get to that craft world. And that's what they were effectively doing. They're filling their ships to the brim with anyone who was not corrupted into the pleasure cult and agreed with their style of
well, and of they life. Also have a pretty easy way to determine this.
Yeah. Being psychic helps. That's the cool thing is that, you know, when we think about, I was thinking about the story and it's like, normally you'd have that moment of like, hey, there's a bunch of like corrupted people here, but we have to save the ones who aren't corrupted. In any movie you've ever seen, that's an impossible task. But the Eldar are so psychically gifted.
Pretty easy.
It's like, yeah, Eric's a yes. Sean's a hard no. Susan, not taking the risk. Nope. You know, it's like they can just go through them one by one.
Big about yeah. getting the people that they were this mindset on
yeah.
here. Because it's a big deal because the craft worlds you find out are very hardcore, rigid in yeah. ways that they think.
And so they begin this process. And this, by the way, doesn't happen slow. This craft world thing is actually pretty quick.
It depends on how you
I think it's third edition. It refers to as the last weeks. It was the final weeks before the fall.
But some of them happen. This is either hundreds or
days.
Or it's... But I'm saying, like, because some of these are just gone and they just decided it beforehand.
Oh, yeah. Some craft worlds were just already there, but there was the last at the very end of the fall.
Some of them.
There was that scene of like the fall of Saigon where people are being, you know, I mean, they're not running.
But I'm saying it depends on which one of the crafts you're talking about, because some of these craft worlds just left.
Yeah. Like, a while ago.
300 years ago and just went, hey, we were supposed to turn around and we're just not.
Yeah, but others were literally parked next to
and had some of these don't. A ton of them don't survive.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. They had to boogie out as Slaanesh is born. And to Brad's point, we don't know, I'm saying I'm a historian. GW has never stated how many craft worlds existed or even how many exist currently. But we know in the fall, quite a few of them didn't make it because they were still way too close.
And way too close is a big deal. I mean, wow, a lot of stuff got blown up.
Yeah, and so
the Eye of Terror is huge.
It is. One part of the story that I do like is, to Brad's point about the craft worlds, the craft worlds weren't anywhere near the size at this stage that they are today. Some of them, like the stories are, they're 10 to 100 times larger. They just grabbed every single person who was going to, who they kind of fit their check marks. These ships were shoulder to shoulder as they fled out the birth of Slaanesh, which must have been really fun visual and feeling as everyone you've ever known who's not on the ship with you gets consumed and screams as their soul. Yeah.
Yeah. Remember, a whole bunch of people died.
Yeah.
On Terra and everywhere else when
the Eye of Terra exploded. Because it was
such a psychic explosion. And those weren't people that were born into the warp.
See, I'm not going to crap on Tau. They're not psychically gifted. They had no idea what was going on.
Oh, God.
Anyway, so that will say the birth of Slaanesh does have a little caveat. We talk about it destroying 90% of the Eldar were consumed. Yes, but then there's also the Harlequins, Exodites, and Drukhari, who it's hard to kind of, are they part of that number? Are they not part of that number? Like, we're going to have fun with the Drukhari cast of, like, how many Drukhari are there?
Yeah, how many Drukhari are there? Also, because they're super not into one, but...
Yeah, but at some point, it's weird. It's the same with how many Harlequins are there?
Absolutely no idea. They're supposed to be a small amount, but...
But, yeah.
But how many is that amount? Mm-hmm. And the thing is also, the Eldar are listed as a dying race, but also, there's just billions of them on each track.
Yeah, I mean, it is kind of funny. We think about the Eldar, like, they opened a portal to hell, you know, and a bunch of them got consumed in the process. But I will give the Eldar credit. After the fall, they have the little moment of your brain burning as everyone you ever known or cared about dies, and they instantly set off to fix it.
It's a big deal because they now make it their life's work to fix all of these things.
Yeah.
Also, when they find out that Necrons are coming back, they start fixing that.
Yep.
They're trying to stop chaos. They're trying to stop Necrons. They didn't think Tyranids were a big deal until, some shit happened.
Yeah, Morag Hai got eaten by one of them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then Malantai happens.
Malantai happened. The Tau shot at him a couple times. And now they're going to go deal with them too. Yeah. The Eldar, the Eldar effectively do to themselves what the old ones did to them 65 million years ago, where they say, forget everything we were doing that wasn't war. We are now only war, conquest, and victory, but also still knowledge, but the knowledge to defeat our foes. There's no, all the poets are gone. Let's put it that way. Well,
kind of, because Eldar society is still, they're forcing it to happen.
They are, but Eldar are, they're not growing it anymore. Because we think about Eldar society, there were Eldar worlds that were devoted to music. Okay, exactly. They were devoted, that's gone. If you're on a craft world, every member of a craft world is a warrior. They're a guardian or more powerful.
Right.
You start at guardian.
Well, that's the thing is that your full-time job is to fight, but then you have the bakers, the poets, the whatevers. But that's your side hustle.
Yeah. Your number one thing is fight. And this is why when you talk about Brad's love of the Eldar, I don't know where his coming from, but I have a big love of the Eldar for this too, because they're dicks about it. Don't get me wrong. They're dicks about it. But they are setting off to fix the galaxy and tell the galaxy what they're also doing wrong. Anyway.
they are pretty snooty about this.
They're not cool, but... Tens of millions of years of Eldar culture just effectively got wiped out, and now it's war, 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 war.
And preventing war, mm-hmm. war, war.
Yeah. The last little bit, though, to take one last check mark we have to cover before getting the next cast is the Webway, which we haven't really spent, I think, enough time on in our casts. And even if we had, we'd have to dive back into it for an Eldar cast anyway. So let's get this going. So the majority of the Eldar that survived the fall of Slaanesh on giant fleets. The Eldar have effectively two methods of transportation. They have their big ships, which, as we said, are faster than light drives. They interestingly don't have navigators. So when an Eldar wants to transit, that's why when we talk about warp travel, the Eldar don't really use the warp to travel because they can't see into it. They can do little short jumps here and there. So their primary modes of transportation are faster than light drives, or
which are wildly better than ARF FTL drives.
Yeah, but still not, you know.
I'm just saying. Yeah, it's just
man in a race, mankind can get there first because they can go through the warp.
unless
there's a webway. And so the old ones began this process of building webways, and the Eldar took this technology and they put it everywhere.
Yeah, they extended the shit out of the webway.
Yeah. I mean, and they never explain how the webway works. It's effectively, from a rule standpoint, I view it as a third dimension, because we've got the materium, the immaterium, and the webway. They are three separate things.
And it's also whether you can exist physically in the webway, or you just instantaneously travel between. They don't really.
Well, in the Ahriman books, they do refer to the webways as being somewhat alive too, because the webway would attack chaos that's inside the webway, not the beings of the way, but the webway itself. So that's why I view it as like a third dimension, much like the way that
because you can exist there, but also you can't.
You can exist, but you might get killed for existing there. So versus,
but it was the thing is like you can take the webway and you would almost in some of the stories you're just there.
That's true. Where I think the webway falls into this weird one is like, so for example, a demon can't exist in the materium without having a host, something like that. A demon also can't exist in the webway, but maybe it can. But if it does, the webway will kill it. It'll
collapse on itself.
Yeah, it gets a little bit weird. But anyway, the webway is a interconnected series of tubes and tunnels. And the second edition codex, I think, actually did the of all the things I read on it, second edition codex is the best way of explaining it. It's this impossible maze of tunnels of varying sizes. Like, so some of the webways are meant for like barely a person to fit through, and others you can put a craft world through. And the network is also not like interconnected like we'll throw out to our English users, like the British Underground, which actually you can get into the ground and kind of get anywhere. The webway kind of, a lot of times you'd have to enter the webway at one point.
You have to go to hubs.
Yeah, go to another spot, get out of the webway, go up above ground. So in some ways, it's like the British tube system. And then come back downstairs somewhere else. Because
the webway has hubs on that.
Yeah.
Because depending on where you want to go and what you want to move,
mm-hmm.
That's why I said it's confusing on that, because they never, sometimes in the stories, they just go into the webway and they just appear like almost instantaneously.
Yeah, and you can do that if you're on A to B webway. Yeah. But a lot of times you get in on A, get off on B, have to fly for a little bit, then get on to C to go to D. It's just the way it's set up. Liskit is made a lot worse with the fall of Slaanesh, because at the fall of Slaanesh, a lot of the webway actually collapsed. The hub might be in the Eye of Terror, so you can't really exit there and take kind of a left turn. But within the webway, to Brad's point, travel can be almost instant. You can just appear somewhere, as we saw in Horus Heresy when they decided, oh, what if we shoot at them? Oh, God, they're all here. One other piece about the webway travel is we're never really sure how long it does take, to what Brad was just saying. Sometimes it's instantaneous. So sometimes it's longer, but it is still faster than warp travel.
Yeah, it's never years, months, whatever, mm-hmm. Distance. It's semi-instantaneous. I mean, again, the stories are wildly different.
One of the key things, though, in the webway that's just going to come up a lot is the webway is not, it's not like the, I was about to say Stargate. We've all seen, and if you haven't seen Stargate SG-1, as I crap talked it earlier in our casts.
It's pretty cool.
It's not a great show, but whatever. It's still fun. The webway is not, I enter in a portal and appear at the other portal. There is a travel in between. And as such, the Eldar actually built structures within the webway. There's two very key ones that were built in the webway. The first one, which is, I think, the more important, maybe, is the Black Library.
You don't think that's very important?
Or Camara. That's what I'm saying. It's
pretty big.
Yeah. I love the Black Library. So
the
Black Library is the ultimate level of the Eldar having foresight, because they decided that they wanted to collect all of the information in the galaxy and all the history of the galaxy. And this includes like how a chaos god is born.
Yeah,
They
have a repository of every single piece of information we've collected mm-hmm. in the last 65 million years.
And this information is mildly critical information and sometimes. Yeah. Did they use it very often? Apparently not, but whatever.
Well, a lot of it's, again, looked at it as if we use this, we could again.
We could break the sky again. Yeah.
We'll break the sky again. We'll follow the Slaanesh. We can't take that chance, even though it probably could solve all of our problems right now.
So in order to protect this information, they built the Black Library within a pocket of the Webway that you can't even get to unless you know the very specific series of doors of the Webway you have to walk through to get to it. It is the hardest place to access.
And also, there's a chance that it also shifts.
Yeah. This is, you could arguably, the Black Library is harder to access than the thrones of the Chaos Gods. It's that well protected. And we haven't even gotten into who's protecting it. It's just that hard to access it. So the Black Library is this is one of the two main structures within the Webway. The other one, though, is an impossibly large city.
How big?
I don't know, but it's where all of the Drukhari live. So at some point before the fall of Slaanesh, effectively, some of the Eldar pleasure cults who were too extreme for the other pleasure cults had to build their own place to go hang out. And they built this thing in the Webway. Ew is the best way to explain Kamara.
And Kamara also has still the most advanced Webway technology, even above the Eldar right now.
Oh, yeah.
Because they're using all of the old ways.
Because they have the old technology. The Eldar now are having to kind of... The difference is we'll cover a lot more in Drukhari later, but the advantage Kamara has is the Denzians of the warp can't access it. So the craft world have to be careful about how they utilize the warp, because using too much of it, and we'll talk later about how it can overpower them. They could actually become possessed or consumed by Slaanesh for using too much. The Drukhari can kind of do whatever they want because they're within the Webway.
Well, they also kind of have to because they did get wrecked by it.
Well, they did, but they can do whatever the pain they have is.
Powered by pain is not a title. It's a reality.
It is a reality, but it keeps the demons at bay. So they still have old Eldar technology as a result of it. Yep. This is why the raiders are so fast. Drukhari cast. I mean, it should be a lot of fun. we'll cover more on Kamara when we do a Drukhari cast, but we just do want to point that out and not say, hey, isn't there something else in the Webway? So the Webway does have structures within it. It's just hard to
gauge. And one of those structures is, infinite, maybe.
So where does this take us? It takes us to the state of the Eldar before we dive into a deeper cast on them. Basically, the Eldar are holding on by a thread. The 90%+ of the civilization was consumed.
A
90% loss is still a lot.
It's significant.
Yeah,
I'm gonna put it under significant loss.
It's a significant loss. They went from ruling the galaxy with no threats to having nothing but threats around them at all times.
They're also one of the things that's a big deal about this is they're, while they have a decent amount of numbers, they're considered a dying race, but there's still a huge amount of them.
Yeah.
But these are very spread out, but they're also kind of interconnected, but not really. There's these nomadic craft worlds who all have their version of what they should do to fix things.
Yeah.
And that's it. So each one is kind of their own Eldar. These are all separate Eldar entities. They're not coming together and fighting.
Yeah, that's true. Because they are all convinced that the other one's plan is not going to be successful.
Right.
That's the one.
And again, when you have a catastrophically bad plan, which was led to the fall, you're kind of like, well,
I'm gonna go ahead and do it this way.
Yeah, let's not break the sky again.
The Eldar, other problem the Eldar have is they're not really great at making allies.
Well, they're also innately pretty disdainful of anybody that's not Eldar.
I mean, don't get me wrong, like they're not gonna negotiate their way through the Tyranids or the Orcs. The Necrons, both of them just shoot each other on sight. So they're left with Mankind and Tau aren't psychically gifted. So they're not real things as far as Eldar are concerned. I mean, honestly, it's just like the Eldar would view you as, if you were a non-psychic race, as being, all right, so why are you here? So you're a rock.
I mean, effectively. Hold on. To be fair, Eldar could fix shit. They have access to the Black Library. They could actually do all these things.
Yeah.
but no one can agree how and why, and they can't convince others.
You know what? Let's spend a minute on it. The problem they have is the Black Library is guarded by the Harlequins.
Yeah, and the Harlequins also think that their civilization effed up pretty goddamn bad.
And so you can ask the Harlequins to read some of the Black Library, and the Harlequins are going to say no. That's the other problem. Is like, yeah, it's not just that the Eldar have fractured, but their greatest repository of information, nah, we're not letting you in there. So the Eldar are kind of, their backs are against it. Again, to their credit, their system is currently fine. Fight them. Which this leads to one other thing we should cover, which is a lot of people who play 40K don't like Eldar. And there's two reasons they don't like them. One is from a lore standpoint, they think they're all dicks.
Which they're not wrong.
Or two, from a competitive standpoint, the Eldar have had the most broken codex in almost every edition.
There, several of the times they might have been a little over par.
I do not believe, and someone correct me, who's playing the game longer than I have, correct me if I'm wrong, was there ever an edition in which point at one moment in the edition, Eldar were not a huge problem on the tabletop?
Fifth edition, I think they were bad-ish.
Okay, one. 10th edition, they broke it without even having... Actually, 10th and 8th, they were able to be broken without even having codex.
Oh my God. Flyers, minus four.
Jesus, yeah. 7th edition, 6th edition, 2nd. Anyway, so you will hear a lot of people who hate Eldar. It's one of the two. They either think that they're dicks from a lore standpoint, or they play competitively and have had just horrible games against Eldar.
And when we get into the Craft Worlds next cast, we're going to deep dive into this. And this, the Craft Worlds are the reason that I love the Eldar, because of the fact that they have some huge heroes and they have a way of life that is hardcore in a sci-fi setting, even fantasy or sci-fi setting. Mm-hmm. So we'll go into a lot of that. And because right now you're like, man, why does Brad like the Eldar? He seems terrible. But
no, the Eldar are cool as hell.
We go into the Craft Worlds, we'll talk a lot about a lot of the things in Eldar life are like crazy inspiring about stuff. Because they always, because of all these things that have happened, everything they do is inspiring to be the best and even the most of the trivial of things.
But they also, though, are like it's Ayandan, right? That's the Wraiths, the Wraith constructs. I love that. It's this idea of we're going to sacrifice ourselves twice to make sure, usually, because Ayandan mostly come in against chaos. That seems to be one of their key areas is like chaos is
raging. They're actively trying to fix the problem. And they know it's a big problem. Like, hey, man. Raise your hand if you created a dark god.
Yep.
Yeah, man, we know we made some shit happen.
It's same with Ulthway. It's different stuff because they do have Eldred, which helps. But the Ulthway, again, they're trying to fix it. That is their thing. They're trying to bring knowledge. Could they maybe explain things a little bit better? Take a few extra words when you're talking to Fulgrim, and maybe Horus doesn't get stabbed with a poison blade? Or you just say, hey, that guy over there with the tattoos on his head, shoot him.
Well, one of the things is the Eldar are so ridiculously connected. I don't think they understand when they... This is what I've always gotten from the lore. Mm-hmm. Is one of the problems is you don't get an immediate psychic imprint and everything else. Because you feel what an Eldar person feels when they're telling you something.
Yeah, I do think that's actually probably a really fair way to put it. The Eldar just don't understand how mankind or others think. Because
one of my favorites in sci-fi, we did it in Mass Effect and things of that nature, where they had, when you get into races that spoke, but also they put out scents or colors or lights.
Yeah.
And if you're only getting the spoken word, you're like, you're missing two-thirds of what they're actually saying.
And we're going to dive more into kind of what it's like meeting an Eldar. Like, just the Inquisition had some interesting viewpoints on Eldar of like how creepy they are. And we'll play with this for a little bit. Like I said, guys, so anyway, that's the end of the first of three casts. As I've said, we're only doing three right now, so we're going to end up probably leaving quite a bit on the table at the end of the third one, and we'll be coming right back around in a little bit to get to them. But I just can't do 10 casts on Eldar.
That's where you're wrong, John.
Well, no, we can do it. It's just people aren't going to want to listen at a certain point.
That's where you're probably right.
So with that, this has been John Varsadi and Brad Chester.
This guy.
See you guys next week.